Thank you, Sue. My name's Gracie Aronofsky. Hi, everybody. Purely by the grace of God, I am a member of the Al-Anon Family Program. My home group is the Preston Group in Dallas, Texas, and I happen to think it's the finest. And that's pretty special for me to say, because there was a time when I didn't think anything was good about Al-Anon. I would like, before I get started, to thank all of the committee for their warm welcome. I would like to thank George for picking us up at the airport on Thursday. I would like to thank the God of my understanding, who brought Marge through quadruple bypass 6 weeks ago, and she's with us this weekend, and I think it's fantastic. She's out there on the ground. She had to get through because she knew the roundup wouldn't go on without her. I would like to thank the alcoholic that I live with for accompanying me this weekend. It's a switch for us. And many of you know him, and for those who don't, I think he's still in the back of the room. He shrunk from 6'4" to 5'6". David, are you back there? I don't know where he is, but I was... Okay, there he is. If I could forget to introduce him, you know. And it might hurt his ego just a little bit. It's just great to be here. We had the privilege of being with you for the first three roundups in Atlanta. And that's been a few years ago. And to be asked back is a tremendous compliment, and I thank you all. I love the theme of the program. We're all in this together. And if there's anyone in here who doesn't read the big book and who still thinks that Al-Anons have horns and all those sorts of things, there are a couple of chapters in there that points to the fact we're in this together, and that's chapters 8 and 9. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for many, many things. Grateful for the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, who found a need many years ago for the families of the problem drinkers and took the message back to his bride, to Lois, and suggested very strongly she do something about the families. And that's how we all came to be. Not through a couple of frustrated rods, but through a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think that's pretty neat. How do I get started? You know, this is like talking to your home group, which is the toughest place in the world to have to give a talk, because everybody knows you and there's so many friends here. And God, if I make a goof up, you know, they're going to let me know about it. And if I lie, they're going to let me know about it. And I'm nervous, and I always am. And Wesley P. many, many years ago said, honey, if you are ever at the point when you're not, don't get up there because you won't have a bloody thing to say. And so I walk through the shakes and go into the bathroom a zillion times and all those good things, and then I just try to settle down and tell you what I was like and what happened and what I'm like now. And it's important for me to remember that since April of 1967, it has not been necessary for me to plan a murder or a suicide. And I share that because if it works for me, it'll work for anybody. I've been married to the same drunk for 48 years this last June. Some are sicker than others, what can I say? Seriously, we had 24 years of drinking, and now we have over 24 years of sobriety, and that is a miracle within itself. I was born and raised in Denver, Colorado, and I grew up in a very wonderful home. There was no drinking in our home. I didn't know anything about alcoholism or drunkenness or anything like that, and I have two brothers, one older, one younger, and I had a mother and father that were fantastic. In fact, my mother accompanied us a number of years ago down here to the Atlanta Roundup. She thought Alcoholics Anonymous was the greatest thing since Hot Fudge Sundays. Never did quite understand it, but she loved it and loved what it was doing for us that we couldn't do for ourselves. I graduated high school at age 16 and I went on to the University of Colorado. I went to have a good time, not to get an education. I went with one specific purpose in mind, and that was to get a husband. Because back in junior high school, I discovered boys, and I discovered I liked them better than I did girls. At my age, I hadn't changed my mind one bloody bit. And you know what he was going to be like. He was going to be 6'4", and he was going to be an All-American football player. Because, you see, I had been an athlete and was for a lot of years, and that was what my fantasy was. I just introduced you to the 5'6" one. What can I say? Fantasy's wonderful. I love it. I still fantasize. But you have taught me the difference between fantasy and reality. And I am grateful for this. December 1941. Many of you in here are not old enough to remember because you weren't with us. You hadn't even been born. There are some of you that are old enough to remember, and the ones who weren't with us have read about it in their history books. And we were in World War II. We on campus were absolutely terrified. I think it was much similar to what we just experienced with the Desert War for the young people. And we gals were particularly frightened. And I think I probably led the groupies. Because all I could think of was, my gosh, they're all going to either enlist, be called to active duty, they're all going to be gone, they're not ever going to come back. And this now 17-year-old was going to be left an old maid. That was my biggest concern. One of my classmates was from Dallas. She invited me to spend the Christmas holidays with her family. And on the train going down, she told me that I would be going out with her brother's best friend. Go out with him, have a good time, just don't believe anything he says. Didn't occur to me to question or to doubt. We arrived in Dallas, got off of the train, and there was a little guy standing there, all 5'6". He took us to my friend's home, and we went out that night, and we went out for the next 2 weeks. We had to get into this program many years later. Before being able to communicate any feelings, of course, and pardon me, any honesty, we started talking about what we did on the so-called dating days. And we didn't did anything. He'd pick me up, we would drive a few short blocks away from my friend's home to a drive-in that served beer and ale in the car. He introduced me to ale. To this day, it is the rottenest stuff I've ever put in my mouth. I just think about it and, you know, my teeth kind of do something. But I sat in that car, pretended to like it. We drank that ale and we lied to each other. And that's what we did for 2 weeks. And I went back to university. And I went back with heart palpitations and all of this fantasy going through my mind that, by golly, this was a guy that was going to be allowed to finish his education. He was 3 years older than I. He still is. I just maybe ought to grab a hold of him. Because by the time he got through with all of his learning, war would be over and he had a profession in front of him. And oh, you know, what we do with our dreams and all of those things that we are capable of doing. Grandiosity, etc., etc. And so I wrote to him when I got back to school, and I didn't hear from him. And I waited a reasonable length of time. I wrote him again and didn't hear from him. And by now I didn't need him because campus had become military. Boulder, Colorado was military. Denver was. I mean, all of everywhere was military. We had about 10 fellas to every gal. And I want you to know I had a blast. It didn't make any difference what you look like. You could be short, tall, fat, skinny, blind, deaf, didn't make any difference. As long as you were a member of the opposite sex, you had it made. And what I started doing was falling in and out of love every time he turned around. I had no idea what it was, but thought I did. I was a great pretender. I don't suppose anybody can identify with that. I would pretend to be anything you wanted me to be. It didn't make any difference. Sophisticated, ignorant, naive, happy, mournful, anything, any way you chose, I would fit that bill for you. And I was having a perfectly marvelous time. And an invitation arrived to go to Dallas to be in a wedding, and I couldn't wait to get there. Because he was going to be in the same wedding. I took that train, arrived there, he was waiting for the train, and we went through all the wedding festivities. And then we went right back to that drive-in and drank that ale and lied to each other. At the end of 2 weeks, I went back to school with the same feelings that I'd gone with the previous time. And I knew this time I had him. And I wrote to him and didn't hear from him. And you know, they talk about the alcoholic's false pride. Let me tell you, you're looking at the home office up here. I was so prideful that I almost burst with it. And how could he do this to me? And how little did I realize I was going to be saying that many, many years down the line. I didn't need him in my life. Of course I didn't. I had the military. And I went on doing all the same things I was doing. And God, it was wonderful. And he'd get shipped out, and another one would get shipped in, and I was in love all over again, looking for Mr. Wright. And then an invitation to go back to Dallas to be in another wedding. And he was going to be in the wedding. And I couldn't wait, and he met the train. And we went through the wedding festivities, and we went right back to that tavern, and we drank ale, and we lied to each other. And I went back to school this time with a fraternity pin. And some plans to be married, or positive plans to be married, some 2.5 years away. And that was in January. In June, in April, a ring arrived in the mail. And June 10th, 1943, 8 o'clock p.m., a formal wedding surrounded by family, friends. My fantasies had been realized in many respects. And we were going to set the world on fire, and everything was going to be beautiful and wonderful, and we were going to go through life doing all the things that Gracie wanted to do. You heard that, didn't you? It never occurred to me to see what he wanted to do. I never asked him if he wanted 6 children. That was my idea. I wanted 6 children. Thank you, God, we have 2. But it was always, I, me, or my. This is the way I was. Selfish, self-centered. You see, I fit within the 12 steps of recovery just as beautifully and perfectly as an alcoholic. And I believe that is the reason we do not have 12 steps for Al-Anon. You're free to agree or disagree with anything I have to say. The absolute only difference between that drunk and me is he was obsessed with what was inside of it, and I was obsessed what was putting it inside of him. There it is. I was powerless over alcohol, and my life was unmanageable 48 years ago, and I didn't know it. I didn't know it. We left the wedding reception in Dad's car. We had 3 days for a brief honeymoon. We drove approximately 4 blocks away. Because, you see, there was a liquor store. He was absolutely scared to death. I was totally terrified. We had been lying and pretending to be so sophisticated and so wise, and we were not. And the only way this marriage could be consummated was in this bottle of liquid gold. We stopped and we picked it up at the first liquor store we could come to. I crawled in that bottle that night with that man, and there I stayed for the next 24 years. For the next 24 years I drank with him, I drank without him, I drank alone, and I drank with other people. And I know standing here right this instant, it is only by the grace of God that I'm not an alcoholic. I am firmly convinced, once again, you are free to agree or disagree with anything I say. You just can't make one out of one that isn't one. It's that simple. Because if not, I would have gotten here first or died drunk. Alcohol, you see, never did to, with, and for me what it does for the problem drinker. Frank talked about this last night. It made me drunk. It changes your personality. There's no question about that. Put it inside of anybody. And yes, I would get drunk if I had too much. I would get sick. God, horrible. I can't imagine anyone enjoying that. I drank for all the wrong reasons. I drank to get even with him. If any of you are wasting your time, let me suggest, because we don't advise, it's a waste. Total. Total. You can't ever get even with a drunk. I tried to get ahead of him, and you know where I got with that. I drank to show him. Oh, what a waste of energy, time, and money. I tried it all, and you know none of it worked. We didn't have the three C's that we have today, and I wouldn't have paid any attention to them anyway. You know, I didn't know I couldn't cause it. I didn't know I couldn't cure it, and I didn't know I couldn't control it, because I could do anything. Just ask me, and I'd tell you. Talk about ego deflation in depth when I got to you. And I had a lot of years. We went back to Dallas, and he went back to school, and I went to work, and we had everything going for us that any two young people could possibly want. We had very little money. We didn't need it. We had love going for us. And every time we had a few bucks ahead, we bought a bottle. And every time we did, he drank too much. And every time he drank too much, I was livid. How could he behave in this manner? How could he do these things? Say these things? And I was totally out of control and didn't know it. Had no idea that what we were starting on was a life's adventure into alcoholism. No earthly idea. He graduated from dental school and was placed on active duty with the military after a brief residency in one of our hospitals. He wasn't allowed to finish that residency. I was able to go with him, and we had fantastic military duty. He was United States Navy. We had all West Coast duty, and it just could not have been better. We started from San Francisco and went all the way down to Coronado, and you just couldn't ask anything better than that. And the amazing thing is that we were taking us with us every place we went, and we were taking the alcoholism with us, and we didn't know that's what it was. Every time we had a problem, it was somebody else or something else. You know how great we are at blame. And you know how great we are at if only and the yes buts. If only we were based in Texas, or if only it was on the East Coast instead of the West Coast, I think it would have been horrible. But hindsight's always better than foresight. We just couldn't have asked for anything better. Every time he drank, I got resentful. Every time he had too much to drink, I tried to show him and tell him what his behavior was doing to me, not to him. And you know where that got me. After 19 months, he was released from active duty. After 19 months of partying, playing, drinking, fighting, and making up, we went back to Dallas, thinking it was going to be different. And you and I in this room know, with alcoholism, it isn't different. With alcoholism, it's progressive. With alcoholism, it's progressively downhill. It doesn't ever get better. It only gets worse. Only we didn't know this. We went back to Dallas. David opened an office. I went to work for him. We built our first home. We were there 5 years. Our two wonderful sons were born. And we should have been happy, joyous, and free. But we had alcoholism. And you see what we did. We partied, we played. We drank. We fought. And we made up. We did not have physical battles in our home, and I think David thanks God for this today. I told you I'd been an athlete. He's not very big, and I was very strong. I taught swimming up until just a few years ago, and you know, swimmers are pretty strong. So we did not have physical. But the verbal battles in our home were unbelievable. I learned every rotten, nasty, foul word known to man. And I used them. I used them on him. I stripped this man of every bit of dignity that he ever had, and I did it with glee. I'm not proud of it. That's just the way it was. I have not forgotten one of those words, but I pray to God that no one in Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, or Alateen will ever hear me use any one of those words from this podium. You see, when I got to you, you told me this was a program of dignity, and I believed. You told me that we shape up, we clean up. You told me the drunk shapes up, sobers up, cleans up his act, and I believed, and I continue to believe. I don't know if it happens in this part of the country, but it is in our part of the country. For some reason that I don't understand, some of our people, Al-Anons and AAs both, get up behind this podium and think they've got to use the F word, the S word, and all those things to go with it. And I haven't found them in any one piece of our literature. So I'm carrying my banner, kids. That's my card. During the 5 years of the drinking, we should have had absolutely fantastic, wonderful life. Now let me stop here and say, we had a lot of fun. It was never all bad, because if it was, I would not be here today. And in taking an inventory, there was a lot more good than there was bad. And I suggest to the babies that I sponsor today in a marital situation or in a meaningful relationship situation, that they take an inventory of that relationship, just the relationship, a simple one. Good on this side, bad on this side. Which outweighs which? Because many times we cannot see the forest for the trees. That was where I was. I thought everything was bad. And of course it wasn't. We had a lot of wonderful times. We had a live-in housekeeper to take care of the two little guys, because you see, I had to be free to be with him. To run and play and drink and party and play and fight and make up. And that we did for 5 years. At the end of 5 years, we were totally bankrupt. Every area of our lives, financially, maritally, spiritually, emotionally, and mentally, we had nothing going for us except alcoholism. Alcoholism. And we didn't know that's what it was. Once again, people, places, and things were the fault. And I didn't know when I got to you that every time I pointed a finger, I had 3 points back. That I had to look within self. You taught me that. I had no idea. Excuse me. We received a reprieve, if you will. David was recalled to active duty in the United States Navy. We believed that perhaps things would level off. He would go on to serve the brief time that he had to, and when he got back, things would be better. Again, we didn't know that it's progressive. It doesn't get better. It only gets worse. The kiddos and I were going to remain in Dallas till he was released, and everything was going to be beautiful. He was gone 2 weeks when he called and wanted to know how soon I could join him. The house went on the market, the furniture went into storage, and the kids and I were on our way. You see, we needed each other. The sick dependency we have for one another. You know, we in this room, A.A. Al-Anon or Al-Ateen, could all win an Oscar given the opportunity. Because people come up to us, I think Frank touched on this last night, come up to us and say, how are you? And we're just fine. And how is everything? Wonderful. And you know what we're like on the inside. We're dying. We don't want anybody to know. And we don't think anybody does know till we get here. And then we find out there isn't anybody who didn't know. Have you ever tried to hide a drunk? God. There's no way in the world. But oh, what pretenders we are. What pretenders we are. The housekeeper that we had taking care of the children was placed with another family. We couldn't afford her on Navy pay. The kiddos and I set forth once more to California West Coast duty. Fantastic duty. And everything was great. We hired a babysitter every night so we could party, play, drink, fight, and make up. You see, once again, we were taking us with us wherever we went. And the problem went right along with us because we had no idea how to, what to, where to. We did not know. No way. He wasn't stateside very long. He was sent to Hawaii on temporary duty and told me just to stay there in California. We were in a little town back then. It was small then. San Clemente, and I know Pat remembers it very well. It was, I think there were 2,500 people when we were there now, and of course it's a major city today. It's just one long strip coast out in California, one humongous from L.A. to San Diego. But back then, it was a charming, delightful little town. And I felt very secure with the two kiddos in that little town, extremely, because the assistant chief of police and the two ambulance drivers were my next door neighbors, so I knew I didn't have to worry about anything. They helped babysit the kiddos, and they looked after me, and there were just a handful of military living in that little community, and we hung together, and it was okay. Except for one thing, I didn't hear from him, and he told me he was going to send his paycheck home, and it didn't arrive. I called him in Hawaii, and he couldn't understand it because he'd mailed it yesterday. And I called him after a reasonable length of time, and I got the same response. It had been mailed yesterday, and it didn't arrive, and I went to the base legal officer. I didn't go to get a divorce. I went to embarrass this man and to humiliate him, and I did. He was threatened with a court-martial, and I thought it was fantastic. He had to sign over an allotment. And officers and gentlemen didn't have to do that back then. But he did. And I thought, I'll show him. And I would wait until he got back. And when he got back, then I would tell him and I would be gone. And my phone rang about 3:30 one morning and was shipped ashore. He was going to be docking in San Diego and with the kiddos and I meeting. And you know, I couldn't wait to get him up. Get them dressed in their Sunday best, and we headed for San Diego to wait for Dad to walk off that ship. And he looked wonderful. He had on his dress blues, and Daddy was home, and all that resentment that I had been building up, and all that anger and disappointment that I had been building up went right out into the Pacific. Dad was home, my playmate was back. Now you know what happened to that resentment and that anger and that hostility. What I did was bury it right down here and continued burying it layer by layer by layer until I got to you people. And you showed me through steps 4 and 5 how to rid myself of this. I didn't know that's what I was doing. No idea. We went back to our little town and we hired our babysitters every night and we partied, we played, we drank, we fought, and we made up. And then he was shipped to the Far East with the division that he was attached to. It was at this point that Kiddith and I moved to Denver to be close to Mother and Dad and to my brothers and their families. We thought it would be very brief. It turned out to be 3 years. And it was 3 years of desertion. I'd love to stand here, tell you that I grew wings and a halo and I was just precious. And I'd be lying through my teeth. I could not get a divorce. I tried. But under the Soldiers and Sailors Act back then, until he was stateside, I was stuck. But no, I wasn't, because I set out to show him. I was going to find that guy, and I was going to find that one that would rescue me. And you know where I went? I went to the officers' clubs, because I had access to them. What more eligible place to go? I loved it. I felt safe. There wasn't anything wrong with me, you understand. And it didn't take me long to find that guy. And he was precious and darling and wonderful and offered to send me to Mexico for an illegal divorce, and I darn near took him up on it. I went to our family physician and his wife, who were like second parents to my brothers and me. Told them what I planned to do, and they understood, and they didn't blame me. You see, we who love the alcoholic need people like that in our lives. They'd go right along with us and sympathize and empathize, compassion with us. And they said, honey, we don't blame you. Oh God, do we love that. And they said, but we have one suggestion. Go home and get a piece of paper and a pencil and put David on one side and this young man on the other and write down everything you like and dislike about each of them. Then make your decision. And you know what I had? I had one in Denver and I had one in the Far East. I didn't know what they were, but they were exactly alike. I introduced him to a former classmate of mine, and 10 days later they ran off and married. That should tell you. I went right back out. The officer's Lowry Air Force Base became my favorite hangout. They got to close the base. You got to hate it. But it was a neat place. I went right back out to the club, and there, the way the bar was then, and it's been redesigned, it's not like that anymore, but the way it was back then, there were either 4 or 5 bar stools here, and then the long bar here with all the stools. And I always managed to get a stool at the short end of the bar for one reason only, because it gave me a chance to look you fellas over. And every one of you fellas knew what I was there for. Some of you gals do too, because you shared it with me. You did the same thing. Then there, in a few minutes, there'd be a drink in front of me, and pretty soon there he is, right beside me, lighting my cigarette. We're staring into one another's eyes, and you know what happens? It's instant love. God, it's wonderful. And there he was, a full colonel, former All-American football player. Fantasies become reality. He loved me, I loved him, we thought. I met this young man 24 hours after he had arrived from Korea. He had been shipped back from Korea due to a drinking problem. I didn't hear that. Because you see, all he needed was me. Dependability, stability. And a built-in family, and here we were. Here we were. Not only that, from colonel you go to general. And I knew that was his next step up. and I already had my fantasy going about the general's wife and everything that went with it. Oh God, there was nothing wrong with me when I got to you people. This went on for quite some time. And I became fearful of the way I was living. And I will tell you briefly one of the main reasons. I would take the current romance of the day, the current date of the day, to all of our family functions. Dad was one of nine, mother one of seven, and this produced many cousins, aunts and uncles. A very wonderful, fine family. My grandparents both settled in Colorado before it was a state, while it was still a territory. And I couldn't go any place with the current date of the day without running into one or more members of my family. I was raised always to do the right things for the right reasons, and little did I realize that what I was doing now, in my mind, was all the right things for the wrong reasons. Justification. I knew that sooner or later, this guy would come back. And when he did, I would legalize the separation. Then I could get on with the business of living properly. I introduced the colonel to a friend of mine. Blessedly, Joni did not marry him. Sadly to say, the colonel died as a direct result of his alcoholism shortly after Dave and I got back together. He did not have what you and I have been given, a program of recovery, because the military back then didn't have them. They didn't know what to do with their drunks. He died in a military hospital, and I think that's so tragic. How many have gone without knowing what you and I know today? My phone rang one day, you know who, and I hung up. It was a call from California. Called back a second time and I hung up, and the third time I listened, and all he wanted me to do was fly out to California and see if we couldn't put this back together. There was absolutely no way I was going. Not at all. Till the next day. Now, I flew out there with divorce papers in my hand. No luggage, because all I was going to do was hand them to him, get on a return flight, and then my life was going to be better. I got off of the plane in Northern California, and he was standing there in his dress blues. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm still a sucker for a uniform. I haven't ever changed that. I was up in Washington with our kids a couple of months ago. We were just there last week, but a couple of months ago I was up there, and the older son and I were on our way downtown D.C., and there was a whole herd of Navy officers walking down the street. We had to wait for them. I said, God, son, look at them. Aren't they gorgeous? And they were. I said, that's what your dad used to look like, believe it or not. I mean, there's just something about a uniform. Anyway, we went into the bar at the airport and we had a drink. We started talking. We went further into the city and we stopped a few more places and had a few more drinks. And I went back to Denver 4 days later to wait for Dad to be released from active duty to start all over. He came to Dallas, to Denver, and picked us up. We went back to Dallas. We stayed a short time. From there we went to a small town in the toward the Texas Panhandle, stayed less than a year, went further into the Panhandle to a little town in Memphis, Texas, wonderful little community, 3,400 people, accepted us just the way we were, loved us in spite of us, and we loved that place and all of those people in it, and it was wonderful. But you know what we were doing, we were taking us with us every place we went. We didn't know about geographics, for goodness sake. We never heard the word before. We didn't know about alcoholism, and we didn't know about the progression, and it didn't get any better, and it continued to get worse. And at the end of 8 years, one more time, we were bankrupt in every area of our lives. And David suggested we should move back to Dallas, and I said, how soon? And we were gone 2 weeks later. We lied to those people and told them we were going back because his parents needed us. They didn't. His little dad was doing everything he planned to do on retirement. He and Grandma were just having a wonderful time. And the last thing in the world they needed was a drunk son, a mixed up daughter-in-law, and two confused grandsons, but they got us. And today I thank the God of my understanding that allowed these two people to live long enough to know a sober son, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a family putting their lives back together one day at a time through this beautiful fellowship. We still had 3 more years of drinking. I went to work immediately, and I was fortunate because very shortly I was self-supporting through my own contributions. I didn't need him or his money or his company, but I made a choice, and I stayed. And every one of us in this room and rooms just like it all over the world have been given that same choice. I chose to accept unacceptable behavior. It's just that simple. Now I want to tell you, I have no regrets today about that choice. I also want to share with you what I've tried to share as honestly as I can. When some of our younger people who are so beautiful, and God, I love you young people, you're what's going to carry on for old folks like me. Thank God you're here. But they ask me over and over again, particularly when they hear David's story, would you do it if you had it to do over? Again, hindsight is always better than foresight. And as honest as I can be, I have to tell you, if I had had a program called Al-Anon and 12 steps of recovery, I would have to say no. Because you told me I did not have to accept unacceptable. It's just that simple. And I watch our young gals coming into the program, living with active problems, and they're devastated, and they're hopeless, and fearful, and all of the things that we are when we get here. And they don't know what to do, and we can't tell them because we don't give advice. But all we do is share our own experience, strength, and hope, and our fears, and our frustrations. And we tell them that no situation is so difficult and no unhappiness too great, that it cannot be overcome, and we tell them how. And that's through the 12 steps of recovery, the program that lies therein. And my suggestion always is you attend meetings regularly for 1 solid year, and you will be able to make a decision of whether to live with him and accept the consequences or live without him and accept the consequences. It's just that simple. Just that simple. And there won't be the doubts and the fears any longer. During those 3 years, last 3 years of the drinking, that's when I planned the murders and the suicides. And I would lie in bed at night, and I don't suppose any of you in this room did that, and plot and plan. And I would think, if I could just get rid of him. Dear God, don't let him come home tonight. Then up looking out the window to see if he was driving up. Dear God, let him be killed. Don't let him kill anybody else. And then I'd say, please God, show me a way to find somebody that'll do it for me. I didn't know how to hire anybody like that. And one night I'm lying in bed, and I ceased talking about this for a long time. And then I had a young drunk come up to me several years ago down out of Houston, and he said, you didn't tell about murdering David. And I said, honey, I don't bet anymore, because somebody might be sicker than I and try it. And he said, but you're the reason I'm sober. And I said, I don't 12-step drunks. He said, you 12-step me. And I said, I don't understand. A couple of years previous to that, Dave and I were in another town outside of Houston for their anniversary, and this little young man's wife was there, and she bought my tape, and she took it home. And he was drunk and passed out at home. And the tape recording was on his pillow, the recorder. And every time he came to, this is what he heard. It was right after plastic bags came out. And they still carry the same warning, you know, keep them away from children and pets and so forth due to asphyxiation. Lying in bed one night, right after I picked up the cleaning that day and had, you know, gone home with it and hung it up, and all of a sudden the light bulb came on, and I said, that's it. All I've got to do is get him home. When he gets home, passes out, all I have to do is take that bag off, put it over his head. He's gone. I go back to bed, put the bag over the, back over the cleaning, you understand, and wait until morning to call the authorities and plead my innocence and ignorance. It was wonderful. I didn't do it, but it sure was fun planning it. And hopefully none of you tried. I refuse to be a part of any of that. During those 3 years, I stole from him every opportunity I could. I've already told you about stealing his dignity. I stole money from him. I never took all of it. I've been in the program long enough that heaven forbid if he ever takes another drink and he has any money, it'll all be gone. Because the drunk doesn't know what happens to his money. I know that when they're drinking. I had a little trouble with steps 8 and 9 when I got to them because of the way I felt that I had treated our son. I did not physically abuse them, and I thank God every day because I could so easily have done this. But what I did was deny them me. I denied them my attention. Not mistreat them. I would prepare their meals. I would sit down at the table with them. I was anorexic back then. I didn't know the word. Didn't know the meaning of it. I was suffering from malnutrition, and I was anemic. And I had. They didn't make sizes 4s and 6 for gals back then, and I'd have to buy an 8 and have it taken in inches. And you know, I'm a big gal. I looked like a fugitive from a consumptive sanitarium. I was a mess, a total mess. You could have asked me how I was, and I was just wonderful, and everything was just fine, because that's the way I was. I would go to my room after the children had eaten, and I would say, don't bother me, and I'd close the door, because I had to worry. Any of you have to do that? God! And the imagination, David has always said, a woman's best companion when left at home alone is her imagination. I couldn't agree more. Because mine went wild. Who, what, where, when, how, you know, all the things that go through our minds. So this is how I was concerned. And the late Chuck Chamberlain set me straight on this many years ago. I love Chuck, and he was very dear to us. And he said, honey, you were doing the very best you were capable of doing at any given hour of any given day. And you know, when he told me that, I knew that I was. And that guilt left. I had to go to my family and say, thank you. Not say, I'm sorry. Because I misused and abused that. And I went to them and I said, thank you for loving me when I was not lovable. Thank you for accepting me when my behavior was not acceptable. Thank you for caring for me when there was so little to care for. Thank you for allowing me the right and the dignity of making my own mistakes. I am so grateful. So grateful. My phone rang in my office one day, and you know who, and he said, I know you don't believe me, but I'm going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, be my guest, and I hung up because I didn't care. I had to get to the point where I didn't care whether this man lived or died. And that's where I was. I had, for my own salvation, for my own survival, to hit my own bottom, which I had done approximately 6 months previous to this phone call. I was on my way home from work. I knew I had to see him. He was a stay away from home drunk. I had no idea where he was. There are no coincidences, and he was sitting in the den when I walked in. And I was able to look at him, and I was able to say, as calmly and quietly as I've ever said anything in my life, David, I no longer care what you do, when you do it, where, how, or with whom. You are no longer a part of my life. And for the first time, I meant it. For the first time, it wasn't said with threats and tears and angering fears. It was said with sincerity. And after I got to you people, I know to this very instant that that was the night that I let go of that alcoholic and I let God take over. And I got out of the way. Totally out of the way. So when he called me in my office and gave me that statement, I really didn't care. And he was home that evening and there was no communication. And the next day he called me back in the office and he said, I know you don't believe me, but I'm going to that meeting. And he got the same response. Because I didn't care. And I went home from work that evening and he was dressing and getting ready to leave. And our older son was in university at the time, our younger son finishing high school. And we watched his dad walk out the door and he said, Mom, do you think Dad really means it? And I said, I don't have any idea, son. We won't know till Dad comes home. And that was April 21, 1967, and he's been coming home ever since. Instant sobriety, no way. Now don't misunderstand me. By the grace of God, he has not had a drink since April 20th of 67. But you see, we don't get sick overnight and we aren't going to get well overnight. Fences don't mend. We don't heal immediately. Let's not expect too much too soon. Also, let's not get good before we get well, please. That's what happens to a lot of us. And again, Frank mentioned this last night. The ones that get good before they get well disappear. And where are they? Where are they? Please, God, sober, sane, and in their right minds for all of us. But we don't know. We don't know. It takes a long time. It takes a long time. 1 week after his first meeting, he invited me to go to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think I beat him to the car. Now, I had not given one hoot what he did, where, when, how, or with whom for weeks, but I beat him to the car. You see, our program is one of attraction rather than promotion, which you heard read at every meeting of the traditions this weekend. At the opening of the meeting. And you attracted me, and I'm going to tell you what attracted me. He'd been taking a bath every night, changing his clothes from inside out. I'm a firm believer, any way you can get us here, get us here. That's what got me to you. And I walked into that open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it began a love affair that has lasted to this very second. A love affair with Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it. I love everything about our fellowship. Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon and Al-Ateen. And I wanted to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted it in the very worst way. And my first sponsor is a sober member of 34 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Chris is the first friend that I had. And my reason for that, I'm going to stop right now and tell you. Because I don't ever want to forget. And I want everyone in this room to remember that we have been handed a responsibility of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness for every new guy and every new gal that walks through the door. I walked into my first Al-Anon meeting, and it was horrible. I walked into a room full of the most pious broads I've ever encountered. They were all women, and they were so good I wanted to throw up. There was a group sitting over here needlepointing and knitting. I didn't do either one. I needlepoint today, but not in meetings. There was a group sitting over here, and they were changing recipes on how to make jelly. I've been on Social Security for 2 years, and I have yet to make my first jar of jelly. They talked about how good they were to those drunks, and they made sure that they were put to bed in clean jammies and clean linen so they'd know where they were the next morning, and they made sure that they were fed so they wouldn't be sick the next morning, and I wanted mine to starve to death in the gutter. And I couldn't identify. And God loved Chris. She said, honey, you're going to keep going to these meetings if I have to drag you. The only time she's ever been to an Al-Anon meeting is to hear me talk. And she's one of the dearest friends I have. She bought me the big book, about my first big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she opened it up to chapter 4 and she said, read the first page. And I said, I don't understand. She said, there's one paragraph in there for you. And I read it. And it said, if you honestly want to and cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount that you take, you're probably alcoholic. She said, now honey, is that you? Because if it is, I'll give you a chip on Monday night. And I knew it wasn't. I've already told you about my drinking habits. Never wanting a drink in my life. Never having to have a drink in my life. And I couldn't find it. So I kept going to those sappy meetings every Monday night. We only had one meeting a week. God, they were horrible. But I kept going and I read every piece of literature. And we had very little back then that came out. And I volunteered for everything that came along. And got involved in service. We didn't know what it was. And I was a group representative, a district representative, an alternate delegate, and I stopped there because it was just not, and it is not my forte to go to New York. My service involves working with others on the group level and availing myself. That's just me. Each of us has our own forte, I believe. I went to that Al-Anon group for 4 years. Because, you know, we don't hear what we hear and we don't see what we see. I didn't know I could go someplace else. And I had to go all the way to Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, Canada, to hear a drunk from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I had heard him before and many times since, to hear Dave C. stand up there and say, if you don't think your group's the best one, get yourself another one. That's pretty profound, isn't it? I heard for the first time, and I knew I wasn't going back to that group. And I told David on the plane going home that night, and he said, where are you going to go, honey? I said, I don't know, but I'm going to try Preston. If that didn't work, I'll try another and another and another. The following Monday, I went to my first meeting at the Preston group, and I've been there ever since. That was 1971. And I walked into a group of loving, caring, honest, open-minded, willing people who shared with me their experience, strength, hope, fears, and frustrations. And I got an Al-Anon sponsor, one of the most fantastic ladies that will ever enter my life, who gave of herself for 28 years everything that God had given her. and 2 years ago, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it's been a real tough thing to accept. Because Bonnie was gentle and yet positive. Kind but tough. Unbelievable lady. You see, there are many things worse than alcoholism. There's recovery in alcoholism. There's no return with Alzheimer's. All of those who Bonnie has given to, all of us, have been trying to give it back in the only way we knew how, and the only way we know how, that she would want us to do. And she told me many years ago, I said, Bonnie, how long do I have to keep on doing this? Going to these conferences and sharing. And she said, honey, as long as they keep asking. That's the reason I'm here today. She told me I had to. I hadn't been in that group very long when the chairman of the group was a tough cookie. She's in her 80s and she's still tough as she loaded. And Ellen walked up to me and said, we need an Ellentine sponsor. And I said, not me, because I didn't even know what they were. And she said, you don't say no in Al-Anon and scare the devil out of me. And I became an Al-Anon sponsor for the next 6 years. And it was an experience that I will cherish for a lifetime. Those kids, remember all my falling in and out of love way back there with the military? I didn't know what love was. I didn't know that that's what I was doing was coming in heat. God, I had no idea. Those kids taught me love is for free with no strings attached. Unconditional love. They also taught me they love and understand that alcoholic. It's me. They don't understand. I'm stark, raving, sober. What makes me react and behave in the way I do? They taught me so much. You've taught me so much. I'm as active or probably more active than I was back then because I love our program. I work with others often and as many and as much as I can. I sponsor them until they find somebody else they can better identify with, and I tell them up front, this is what I do. You don't ever fire a sponsor, you just add on so nobody's feelings are hurt. I love everything about our program. I've told you Dave and I celebrated our 48th wedding anniversary this past June. I would love to tell you that we're on a perpetual honeymoon in idealized normality. We're normal, I hope. Fairly normal human beings. And we agree to disagree many times on lots of things. But he has a fantastic program. And many of you know this. And he's never said no in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for this. And I would choose for him not to if it was my choice. I have my program. And it's up to me whether I want to be free. It's not up to you. It's not up to you. It's up to the God of my understanding who has shown me the way and the door to freedom. And I'm so grateful. Our two sons, of course, are men today. Our older son is an attorney, practices in Washington, lives in Arlington, Virginia. Some years ago brought us a daughter. We always wanted a little gal from Santiago, Chile. And if I'd had her myself, I couldn't love her anymore. Every mother should be this blessed. We are the best of friends, and she calls me just like I was her own mom, because her mom lives so far away. 7 years ago, they gave us our first granddaughter, and 17 months ago, they gave us our second one. Two little girls. And they're our joy and our life and our happiness. We see them as often as we can. Dave and I were with them last week, and we had a blast. We just had a blast. Abigail thinks her grandfather is something else. And it's because of you. Because of you. Number two son, Donnie, stayed single for many years. He's an executive with a firm in Georgia. Isn't that amazing? And he's been billeted overseas for many, many years. He was in Hong Kong for 7, in Sydney, Australia for 1 year, and now in Singapore. And I used to worry about him because he was alone. And I say, Donnie, there has to be some old shoe for some old sock out there, honey. God, get married. He said, Mom, don't worry about it. I will when I'm 40. And I said, is anybody waiting in line? And he said, no, but they will be. And a year ago in June, he brought her home. Well, a year ago last Christmas, he brought her to visit. A year ago in June, he brought her home to make plans for a wedding in January. He met her in Sydney, Australia. And let me tell you, we've got a United Nations going in our own family. Susan's a little doll. Donnie's 6 foot tall, and Susan's about 5 foot two, and wears a size 4, you know, this big. Donnie says, Mom, she has to look up to me, and of course she does. She had never been married. She's 31. Her mother and father are Iraqi, and they lived in Kuwait for 22 years, and on retirement moved to Australia. Susan was born in England, but she is of Iraq extraction. Here we are with our United Nations, and her family is wonderful. On January the 5th of this year, we had a formal wedding in Dallas, Texas, in the evening. And over here were all of our guys and gals. Every one of the guys had on a tuxedo. All the gals were dressed like who laid the chunk, you know. And over here were all of Donnie's and Susan's friends, her family, his business associates, people from all over the world. And it was just phenomenal. And you know, this is all because of you. Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon and LAT. The boys don't drink and they don't smoke. Donnie called me Tuesday night. He's flying into Dallas on business Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, and of course I can't wait for him to get there. And he said, Mom, can you get me a whole bunch of Al-Anon literature? And I said, I can get you as much as you want. A couple that they have become very good friends with. The husband had just gone into Alcoholics Anonymous over the weekend, and his wife didn't know what to do or how to do it, and he needed Al-Anon literature in English. And I said, if they don't have it in Singapore, honey, I'll send you back with a suitcase full of it. These are kids that don't have a problem. These are boys that didn't have the benefit of our program other than by osmosis. And they've been 12-stepping ever since they were in university. It's amazing. And it's because of you. I read 3 words on a church marquee a couple of years ago, and they've become a part of me. And don't ask me why, you know, we're kind of crazy people and things thick in here. And they were just 3 words, and it said, become, believe, and belong. And on the way to the airport that day, I thought, you know, that's kind of us, isn't it? We become willing to go to any length to do something about ourselves when we get here, or if we don't, we walk away from it, go back out there and suffer. And once we're here for a little while, we believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to some semblance of sound thinking and sound judgment and sound mind. And then we wake up one morning after we've been here a little while, and we realize we belong. We belong to a fellowship that's indescribably wonderful. Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and LAT. You've made me belong, and I love and thank you. God bless you.